Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Newgen Software Technologies Limited Q4 FY23 financial results conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during this conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Deepti Mehra Chugh, Head Investor Relations. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. I'm Deepti Mehra, Investor Relations, Newgen Software Technologies Limited, and I welcome you all to the Q4 FY23 results of the company. Joining with me today on our call is the management, Mr. Diwakar Nigam, Chairman and Managing Director, Mr. Varadarajan, Whole-time Director, Mr. Virender Jeet, CEO, Mr. Arun Kumar Gupta, CFO. Before we move on to the discussion, let me highlight that this call may contain certain forward-looking statements concerning Newgen's future business prospects and profitability, which are subject to a number of risks and uncertainties, and the actual results could materially vary from the forward-looking statements. Past performance may not be indicative of the future performance. The company does not undertake to make any announcement in case any of these forward-looking statements become materially incorrect or update any forward-looking statements made from time to time by or on behalf of the company. For further details, you may please refer to the investor relations section of our website. I would now hand over to Mr. Nigam for presentation of the results, which will be followed by Q&A by Mr. Jeet.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us today for our Q4 results call. It is a happy moment for us at Newgen as we crossed the rupees 1,000 crore milestone for total income in this financial year. We witnessed a growth of 25% in revenue over last year. The growth was primarily driven by our traditional markets, with India growing at 41%, followed by EMEA at 28%, APAC at 17%, and US at 10%. We have made significant progress as an organization and delivered strong performance across all key business metrics during the financial year. Expansion of subscription revenue. While accomplishing the growth in revenue, we continued with our smooth transition from license to subscription revenues. Our subscription revenue have now reached rupees 323 crores. This revenue stream is predictable and recurring in nature and grew faster than the overall revenue growth rate of the organization at 31% YOY. They now also comprise 33% of share of our total revenue. Growing large customer base. Our solution today are driving deeper penetration into our customer base. We have been seeing an increasing trend of average ticket size per customer. Of the 520 odd active customers today, 51 customers had a billing in excess of rupees 5 crore for the year, compared to 38 last year. At the same time, we continue to maintain low level of client concentration. Moving to updates on our offering and opportunities. Innovation is at the core of Newgen, and we continue to invest 10% of our revenues on various R&D initiatives. We are excited to see that our innovative offerings are well-positioned to tap the large market opportunity for automation at scale by enterprises. With the new version of Newgen One, we are enabling our customers to achieve their digital goals and automate their operation at scale. Our platform is ideally suited to achieve enterprise goal of revenue enhancement, increased productivity, and optimization of cost and business operation and team collaboration. It helps businesses deliver exceptional customer experience, achieve operational excellence, and drive continuous innovation. The solutions are quick to implement and very cost-effective. Newgen One is backed with cloud-native, multi-persona, AI-ML data sciences platform that enhancement of document classification and extraction capabilities. Integrated process and robotic process automation capabilities. And it strengthens DevOps for easy application deployment and update. Newgen's RPA complements the low-code application development capabilities and is expected to further empower our customers to achieve end-to-end process automation. Our trade finance solution is taking us deeper into the banking and financial services vertical and opening up opportunities for larger deal sizes. We are now targeting larger size banks and financial institutions across the world. We are thrilled to be recognized as a leader by various reputed industry analysts across segments. During the quarter, we have been recognized as a leader in the Forrester Wave Content Platform Report. We believe this recognition validates our dedication to empowering business with cutting-edge solutions as we remain at the forefront of content management innovation. Newgen One has been also acknowledged as a strong performer in the Forrester Wave RPA report. On the operational front, the year marked prioritization of initiatives aimed at enhancing employee engagement, talent management, and capability building. Our focus has been on fostering a culture of inclusion, promoting diversity, investing in learning and development, and empowering our employees. We believe that by investing in the growth and development of our employees, we can enhance their skills, knowledge, and capabilities, while also driving the retention of top talent. This is essential for driving our long-term goals. On the sales and marketing front, we are continuously working on building our direct sales channel along with the focused alliances with our partners, especially the system integrators, to expand our market footprint. We have been participating in and hosting multiple face-to-face events across the globe. We also hosted customer meets across Delhi, Mumbai, and Dubai for our customers during the year. We continue to work towards strengthening our relationships with the GSI. We are driving joint sales and marketing activities and campaigns, as well as joint solution development with our partners. We recently entered into strategic partnership with Mambu, a leading cloud banking platform based in Amsterdam, and Sopra Banking Software of Europe to expand our geographic presence. On profits and margins, we delivered healthy margins during the year. Our EBITDA was stable at rupees 212 crores, resulting in a margin of 22%. And profit after tax was rupees 176 crores, leading to net margin of 18%. During the year, apart from investing 10% of our revenues on R&D initiatives, the company invested 22% of revenues on various sales and marketing initiatives. Our balance sheet is strengthening with every quarter. We have a strong net worth, no debt on our books, and a healthy cash and bank balance, enhancing our financial stability. Our net cash generated from operating activities during the year was at rupees 136 crores. Our net trade receivables were rupees 388 crores at the end of March, which resulted in net DSO of 145 days. In Q4, our revenue were at rupees 305 crores with a growth of 32% YoY. This is the first quarter for us where we crossed the revenue milestone of 300 crores. We witnessed acceleration in business from customers, especially in U.S. and India region during the quarter. As we close this financial year, we are excited for the year ahead as we believe there are huge opportunity for automation at scale in enterprises, especially in banking and financial services domain. Newgen continues to empower enterprises towards a more holistic or enterprise-wide automation, which is built for change. This is essential towards building sustainable organization of the future. This would in turn ensure faster time to market, minimization of cost, and superior customer experience, all building blocks of the organization of tomorrow. We are well equipped to take this journey with our cutting-edge products, focus on innovation, skilled team, and deeper customer relationship across the globe. We are now open to Q&A.
Thank you very much. We'll now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. The first question is on the line of Baidik Sarkar from Unifi Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mr. Nigam, Harinder, and the rest of the team. Congrats on a very strong print. A couple of questions. The U.S. has shown good traction this quarter, but in light of the systemic banking crisis that the U.S. is subject to today, is there a risk to our pipeline per se? You know, what's the sense from your current conversations? And secondly, our go-to-market success in the U.S. this quarter, was that courtesy our system integration partner or were they courtesy our organic initiatives? And, you know, what's your sense of traction on the geography per se, ex banking?
Thank you. Thank you, Sarkar. And I think for the U.S., as you currently understand, you know, our business is pretty, you know, diversified in geos. And the presence for us, U.S., is in accounts which are typically in financial services and some large enterprise coming from GSIs. Today, we don't see any risk in terms of our pipeline on that. Probably we don't have the same concerns as the larger GSIs because I believe that most of our business is still driven from licenses and which are opportunities are generated on both sides in terms of when people are looking at efficiency and reduction of costs, our platform plays a very important play, as well as when they are looking at growth and scaling up. So in that case, I don't see, you know, a substantial risk right now, and at least it's not visible for us from the accounts we are dealing with. What has happened in last quarter, I think we have closed some deals organically from our banking side, but also we got some support from the GSI deals, especially from the existing accounts which we have already acquired over previous quarters. So that's what it has led to. For the year, since we are resetting the U.S. strategy in terms of some amount of shift from our traditional banking accounts to slightly larger accounts, I think some amount of early wins have started coming in, but it's still a long way to go before we are completely out of the woods out there. But, you know, if U.S. has started contributing towards growth, that's what we are happy. At the year-end, it was still a significant two-digit growth, while our first two quarters was not really good in U.S. So, you know, going further for the next year, as of now, we don't see any systematic risk or any risk, you know, in terms of recession or any other thing from the account.
Sure. Yeah, it does, Harinder. You know, on the same lines, you know, Middle East, one really understands the correlation between energy prices and growth investments, right? Do you reckon we can continue with this momentum, or would you caution saying that this is a cyclical high, you know, just given the commodity prices have been, and, you know, it'll be difficult for us to kind of, you know, repeat this kind of performance? You know, your sense of the Middle East business?
So, you know, it's not cyclic in a way, but what we have always cautioned about Middle East, that the market's behavior changes when oil hits very extreme low levels. But in a moderate climate, even the oil going up to $50-$60 or so, I don't think there's any impact on our business. And for I think there are two parts of this Middle East business. I think though it is an oil-based economy, but now as many countries are trying to delink their economies from oil, there's a lot of economic activity happening in territories like Oman, Saudi has been a great territory, even UAE. So I don't see anything which would substantial change in the whole scenario on the market. So what we have delivered over last 2-3 years in Middle East, I don't see any reason why we should not continue the growth momentum this year out there.
Right, that's helpful, Varinder. So given where your pipeline and conversation is, you reckon we are on course for a 20-25% kind of growth this year as well for your overall business?
See, I think we don't give guidance, and I think that's a standard answer you guys are also used to. But what I'm saying is, I think we have a historical trend of growing about 20-25%. And, what we have aimed for last 2-3 years is to accelerate that growth rate. Some amount of that acceleration has come in last year. And, as of now, if all things remain the same, we think that we can continue the growth momentum going next year.
Sure. The last question before I get it, gentlemen. Your payout this year relative to your cash flows has been rather muted, right? So what are the broad thoughts on that? There's a cash pile that's increasing. I don't think we are of the DNA that will make aggressive M&A. So what's the long-term plan on your cash build-up and your distribution to stakeholders?
So I think we are, following the policy of a dividend payout which we have maintained over last year, so which is a kind of a percentage of what we make as PAT. And of course, you are right. We are generating a bit of cash, and so far we have not deployed it for any other purpose. But the organization's whole purpose is to invest for growth. And we are aggressively looking at opportunities both on organic side and inorganic side for that growth. I think it will take us, at least a few more quarters to come up with a reset policy either on dividend or looking at how do we deploy that cash. So till that time, we'll have to be a bit patient on that.
Sure. Look forward, gentlemen. Thank you. All the best.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Mihir from Carnelian Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks for giving the opportunity and congratulations on a good set of numbers. Largely wanted to understand the traction on the trade finance side of the piece. How are you seeing the traction on the trade finance platform given the deal sizes are slightly larger here? And also wanted to understand in this context, you mentioned that you are moving from traditional banking to larger accounts in the US. Given the fact that, how are we looking at trade finance platform plus this comment that you made upon, and how is the organic sales channel specifically panning out in the US? So that was my first question. And second question was on the GSI. How is the traction now in GSI? If you can quantify the number of deals won this particular quarter and for full year, and how is that compared to last year? And how do you see traction here building up? Yeah, so those were the questions.
Thanks, Mihir. And let me try to answer, and one by one, let remind me if I missed something. So I think you're right, absolutely, on the trade finance. We did this new product. It has had been almost like 1.5 years since we hit the market with this. And we are finding substantial traction in the market. And the traction so far, what we are converting is predominantly in Middle East and India. That's the market we are really going to focus on. Having said that, we do sense amount of interest coming from US and other markets as well. But right now, I think if you ask from a business planning perspective, we have closed some significant deals in these markets, some marquee accounts, I think, which we'll be very proud of, once we announce, once we have the permissions to announce. And going this year, we expect 7 more deals across these geos for trade finance, which should help our top-end growth as the deals are substantial in size. But as you know, these are projections, and I think we'll have to wait for actual results to come in. For the US, we have seen interest on trade finance, but I would be slightly cautious in terms of we don't have a real go-to-market strategy built around trade finance right now. We're still focusing on moving up the value chain on accounts which are slightly bigger than $20 billion, on banking side, and try to sell our traditional products, which has been typically in the lending side, both on commercial as well as retail. As well as, there's an opportunity of looking at our platform sale, which is ECM and BPM and low-code platform, what we are trying to sell. That's the market we're focusing on. Out there, we have started seeing early signs. Last quarter also, we closed a few deals on that front. So we are thinking that strategy probably is going to show some kind of returns in coming months and coming quarters. On the GSI traction side, as you shared, the GSI momentum in the business, it has added value, but has not added value at the speed we've expected. Having said that, as Mr. Nigam said in his address, we have formed new relationships and new alliances with lot of other companies and other product pay companies which are adding to the funnel size. We did close around 3 deals, if I'm right. I may not be sure about the number in this quarter, which are our new deals. But also, we are able to get substantial deals from the existing accounts which we have closed previously. Compared to last year, the number of new logos acquired from GSI, the number is not significantly very high. But on the revenue realization from those accounts, we are at a much better position. So Mihir, I will stop here. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, sure. That's really helpful. And lastly, on the margin side, I mean, given the fact that, we saw margin recovery happening in 4Q, is a seasonal quarter. But how should we see FY24, FY25 going ahead, given the fact that, there is like 300 basis points end of a decline, at least on a YY basis for FY23?
Yeah, so Mihir, I think as you see that on the last year, we have, the margins have not been what has been the previous year because the previous year cost base was not realistic. And last year for whole of industry, the manpower costs have been revised substantially and that has been the predominant cost base growth. Also, what has happened is our travel restoration as well as, the operating expenses of coming back because almost we are at 99% of our workforce has in some way started coming back to office, whether on part-time or on full-time basis. So on operational, this is a new cost base, and we had set up a target of doing around 18% of net margin and around 21 to 20% of EBITDA. I think we were very close to that. Going in this year, we are still looking at this year as our growth year. So we continue to invest aggressively in both sales and marketing side and our building capacity for that growth. A lot of manpower costs which have been incurred last year would also have an impact this year. So I think we should be able to maintain these margin levels for this year and then, really have a bit more bias for growth.
Sure, yeah, that's it from my side. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Harsh Shah from Dimensional Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, sir. So I just wanted to understand how the competitive landscape is emerging, especially in your traditional markets, and also in US, given that the larger companies are seeing some sort of pressure or some sort of slowdown in their revenue growth. So is there any sort of pricing pressure that you are facing? So how is the competitive scenario emerging now?
Yeah, thanks, Harsha. Thanks. Regarding competition, I think it's for our four product categories, I think the competition is pretty standard. And those are typically, if you look at the Gartner and Forrester quadrants, you will see all the names out there. And predominantly, they play in all the markets. Beyond that, for our vertical products, what we do in lending, what we do in origination, or what we do in trade, there are different set of which are typically what we call vertical banking products. Those are the competition. One of the important developments which has happened is on the core product category, which is ECM, where we have also been rated as the leader by Forrester recently, there has been a lot of consolidation. And in fact, now we do only see two or three key players emerging in the market. And we think that should help us in terms of wherever there's a modernization of enterprise content management, we should be able to make more inroads. On the larger what's happening in US and companies, since our revenues are big, diversified across these territories, we are not seeing the same impact or we don't have the same, insight into what's happening with larger companies in US. And we are growing fast, but on the revenue side, some of the problems of larger companies are from the base accounts which they are sitting in, probably typically in tier one in US and Europe. And that's where they are seeing the pains. For us so far, we are not seeing that coming into our, but I think as the next few quarters show, I think more clarity will come in. We have a very extremely healthy funnel for the next year. Our order books have improved, beyond the revenue numbers we have done. So we are quite confident we should be able to have a good year. But environmental conditions can be very acute these days. And we saw that a couple of years back. So we have to keep our fingers crossed till actual things happen.
Thank you. If I have to talk about your growth potential for next 3 to 5 years, how do you expect the growth to come? Will it be largely from more client addition, or will it be more from increasing the revenue per client? How will that pan out?
You know, so as a software product company, you know, our aspiration is to be a $500 million and $1 billion company. So, and that aspiration is based on that there is an unlimited market potential for the product categories we play in. And what we are thinking that our penetration in mature market is going to make that, you know, potential realize. Having said that, we have seen enough growth coming in emerging markets over the last 3-4 years. They have been growing, and there have been multiple drivers for that growth as they are adopting technology. So I'm very excited that, you know, next 4-5 years, we are designed to grow at a much higher, you know, higher speed than our traditional growth rates. The growth is coming predominantly from two factors, you said, right? One is, I think as a product company, net client addition is important. We are pivoting towards slightly larger deals, so our ability to add roughly around 15 new logos in terms of which are the new names is what have been, what is the run rate we're working on. We do expect to improve that in the next 2-3 years. But on the other hand, on average deal sizes, as we are shifting to larger account, that is improving, as well as ability to mine from existing customers as our solution stack becomes broad. We are able to do. So per account realization is improving, average deal sizes are increasing, but acquiring new logos is very essential to building a long-term, you know, the tail for the business. Does that answer your question, Harsha?
Yes, certainly. Thank you so much, sir, and wishing you all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. A request to all the participants, please restrict to 2 questions per participant. If time permits, please come back in the question queue for a follow-up question. The next question is from the line of Chirag from Ashika. Please go ahead.
Yeah, congratulations on good set of numbers. I have a couple of questions. In your opening remark, you mentioned that we are targeting large banking and financial groups. So I would like to understand what strategy we are following to tap such large corporates. And second, on logo addition front, the net logo count compared to previous years is relatively on lower side. So what strategy is there to, you know, increase the momentum in terms of logo addition? Yeah, I would like to know these 2 questions. Yeah.
Thanks, Chirag. So Chirag, when I said, you know, our ability to, we are trying to shift. So initially our banking in US was focused on typically banks which were in somewhere in asset sizes of billion to all the way up to 20 billion. We have slightly pivoted and started focusing typically on banks which are at least 10 billion or, you know, more, up to all the way up to 50 to 100 billion. And what this is, what we have seen is as we have been able to garner some more support in terms of referenceability in US and our solutions have become more mature, we have seen we have been able to, you know, enter those accounts. We are still not talking to tier 1 banks. We are still talking of mid-level tier 2 banks and rather than tier 3 banks on that. That's what I meant in that US banking. And we already have referenceability in that market. We have got early wins. Even this quarter, we closed some deals out there. So we think that's going on as per plan. On the logo side, you are absolutely right. I think at one time, you know, we have moved over the last 4-5 years from around 60-70 logos to around 50 logos. That's also to do with lot of smaller account deals which we were initially pursuing as through channel partners or through, you know, in terms of direct sales. We have slightly moved away from that market and looking at lifetime values of those customers have not been in our favor. So we have slightly pivoted. And, you know, the acceleration over next 2-3 years will come from more markets we are entered. Our Australia started showing results. Our UK subsidiary has started winning logos. And US, as soon as we stabilize our strategy on banking, we should see the acceleration in logos. Having said that, our traditional markets which are driving the growth right now, India, Middle East, and APAC, also have huge potential. We are looking at actively looking at how do we diversify to more adjacent verticals which can grow for us. And I think over the time, we'll see that there's going to be an acceleration in number of logo acquisitions. Does that answer your question, Chirag?
Yes, sir. So one follow-up question. You mentioned that we are targeting new geographies for logo addition. So the new geographies having similar size of deals which we're targeting to the existing geography?
Yeah, Chirag. I think that new geographies are typically the mature markets. So we expect the deal sizes to be, you know, same or better.
Okay. All the very best, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Chirag.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Saurabh Siddhavani from Sarasar Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, everyone. Two questions. First one, given the macroeconomic conditions and the EBITDA negative nature of our major peers...
Sir, sorry to interrupt you. Your voice is coming a little distant. Can I request you to speak through the handset?
Yeah, I'm speaking through the handset. Is it correct? Is it better now?
Yes, sir.
So I was asking that given the macroeconomic situation that the free money has stopped and the EBITDA negative nature of the business of our peers, are we seeing any passiveness in bidding by them and have we been able to take advantage of that?
Yeah, Saurabh, thanks for the question. Saurabh, you know, I think the business, most of the conversation what we hear about Indian IT and the economic is typically from service companies angle. And I think predominantly driven by the tier one, tier two companies, which operate at a very different, you know, size and, you know, ratios. So I'm, you know, we are not very sure about how to answer that question because we are slightly not in that business. We are still in the business of, you know, acquired accounts and, you know, doing, you know, in terms of what you call a high touch sale or what you call serious enterprise sale. In terms of right now, what we have seen traditionally before the COVID, before the demand cycle really went off the roof, we really felt that the GSI ecosystem was more hungry for deals and they were, you know, fighting for deals more aggressively in the market. So what I sense is as there's going to be a tightening of probably the economic situation, we will see more and more hunger coming in GSIs to go and approach customers and deals. And that happens in solar. And in that case, we are looking at that should help our cause, what we have built in terms of investments along with that. Other companies in downturn, I think every company is more hungry for business. I don't think there is any lack of competition. So I think there's going to be a more heightened competition in terms of, you know, if there's a slightly a downward economic cycle.
Okay. The second question was related to a simple business clarity that I wanted to understand was our product, Newgen's product are built in India and given the labor arbitrage that we have, do we make our products means at a lower cost as compared to our peers and so all else equal, we should be always winning on pricing, right?
Yeah, I think, so you are absolutely right. I think there is a 6-7% advantage on R&D cost. At the same R&D, if it was supposed to be done in US, the cost would have been roughly maybe 20% of the revenue or 22% of the revenue. So there is a cost advantage you are able to do with lesser cost, you are able to do and more. So you have an inherent advantage of doing things. But then I think that advantage that gets balanced by the size of some of our peers. Generally, we are fighting much larger companies. So they have a much larger budgets at the size they are in terms of an R&D. So I think the whole cost arbitrage gives us an advantage to at least compete out there. And the cost of developing R&D does not translate into cost of the product. Cost of the product is a market reality, the benefit you transfer to the customer. So the pricing to products are benchmarked to what how the market determines. So there's no direct correlation. What you're saying is true is more about more directly related to services.
Okay. Thank you. That's all.
Thank you.
Participants, you may press star and one to ask the question. The next question is from the line of Manoj Vaidhi from Carnelian Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good evening. Thanks for taking my question and congratulations for good set of numbers and superb education. I have a couple of questions. First one is, just wanted to check that our GSI strategy particularly, the way the things are shaping up, like last 2-3 years, we are trying to get inroads into with our GSI partners. So just wanted to understand, is there something that's not clicking or something which is leading to a delay in terms of getting the traction on GSI strategy? So if you can give some more color on that, that will be helpful.
Manoj, thanks. And you're absolutely right. Last 2-3 years, we've been building on this GSI strategy. And I think we're very lucky to get some very extremely good early wins, which really established both recall of NewGen within the GSI mindshare and also added innovations to other GSIs. See, what you know, in terms of success or failure of GSI is determined by the ambition we have around that. We do get a lot of business through GSIs. I think, in fact, 20% of the revenues today is even driven by partners. And we have some amount of marquee wins every year with GSIs. What we expect this to drive the next phase of big growth in mature markets for us. Out there, we have not really reached to a number where we could say that, hey, it has added a delta of 5% or 10% to our revenue growth. So it is all adding up, but not at the speed we desire. Having said that, I think, you know, we have relooked at that strategy. While we continue what we are doing out there, we have expanded the ecosystem. We have looked at tiering of partners out there. We also looked at ecosystems beyond GSI, which is the product play. I think Mr. Nigam talked about some of the relationships, what we are trying to build with Sopra or Mambo or any other company. So we're expanding. The reality for a product company is that their next stage of growth does come from the partner ecosystem, what we call a GSI or other thing. I'm very sure our company will continue to perform great and grow as the markets which we are operating in right now have huge potential and upside for our kind of products. But I'm very sure that for our $500 million and $1 billion achievement target, the GSI and the partner ecosystem strategy has to fire. And it may take 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 5 year, but we'll be on it till it fires.
Just to further on this, like when you enter into a partnership with a GSI, I'm sure that GSI must be dealing with your competitor's product, or they may have another other competitive product. So just wanted to understand that vis-a-vis their existing products, means what kind of or in terms of our offering vis-a-vis their existing product, generally, is it a cost factor which plays big consideration, or is it something else?
Yeah, so Manoj, I think that this is typically a very, very large question and a very large answer, but I'll try to summarize. So what is happening in any product company? I think we become very good in certain areas of our operation. Today, NewGen, for any content-based process automation, or any automation which needs scale in terms of when you're doing hundreds of processes, we are probably the best product in the market. Mm-hmm. Now the whole world may not know it, but some of these GSIs do know it because they have done this work with us for multiple customers in different geos. Mm-hmm. So they understand the positioning. Having said that, they also have in their portfolio other products. So one is that GSIs do understand the value we bring in, and that value is in terms of the coverage of our product, the value is in terms of flexibility which we exhibit as we have a closer relationship with them. But also, as a company, it is finally our goal to sell to the end customer. So we have to influence the end customer. That's about our brand, that's about our presence in Gartner's and Forrester, that's about our size of a business. So it has to work on both sides. While we work with GSIs, show the unique value prop we provide them, show them the advantage of cost and flexibility, but also we have to work with the end customers in terms of if there is a customer willing to buy my product. So most of the products are not sold by the GSIs. It's also the customer has a big play in 70% of the cases what product they choose. The issue is, if they choose me, then do they think that there is a trained GSI ecosystem which has an implementation capability to implement that? So that's what we cover with GSI.
Right. No, that's helpful. And I have one last question. If you can touch briefly on operating margin, because what I understand, our kind of business has a scope of big operating leverage. So, and as you mentioned in one of the questions earlier, that right now your emphasis will be growth rather than expanding margins. But in terms of operating leverage, how do you think that at after what level, what scale operating leverage will start kicking in and we will start seeing good expansion in margins along with top line growth?
So, see, the question is, we are already sitting at decent margins, and I think, yeah, product companies generally can generate much higher margins as our gross margin position is much better. I think we do generate around more than 65% gross margin, and roughly around 55% of our revenue has no direct costs associated with it. This is our license, subscription, ATS. So there is. But also you have to understand, for product companies to exist and survive, we have to continuously invest in R&D and sales and marketing. Now, the global benchmarks for the product companies are much higher than what we invest today in terms, because we got some out of operating leverage because of the cost bases in India. So as I said, our bias is for growth and to maintain healthy margins. But naturally, once you become a very sizable company, and sizable companies, we have seen, roughly around $400 million and above companies, and if they become on slower growth trajectory, they end up keep on expanding margins for many, many years. So I think our ability to, generate a net margin of somewhere between 18%-20% is what we think right now is feasible for next 2-3 years, and then investing everything else on growth.
Thank you. Manoj, sorry to interrupt you. I'll request to join the queue again for a follow-up question. The next question is from the line of Devang Bhatt from IDBI Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, am I audible?
Yeah, Devang.
Yes, you are. Thanks for taking my question. Congrats on a good set of numbers. So one of your GSI highlighted that low-code and no-code is gaining traction in this scenario. So are you seeing similar increased traction in mature markets in the current scenario? That's question number one.
Devang, sorry, could you just repeat that? I couldn't understand that.
Okay, let me go to my handset. Yeah, hi. So, one of your GSI highlighted that, low-code and no-code is gaining traction. So are you seeing such increased traction in mature markets in the current scenario?
Yeah, so I think, we are very. See, I think we have a methodology of last 20 years on pushing low-code, no-code, and I think they have come through different names. It has been BPM, iBPS, low-code, no-code, hyperautomation. These are all categories of the same name. There's a huge interest in enterprises across the world that they don't want to, take the traditional engineering methods for building their apps. They want the low-code method. So that way, there's an interest. Having said that interest is also very horizontal, so every customer, every application has to be low-code. So that's a huge market opportunity across the globe, and we are very, very excited about, helping customers in that automation side. So we are seeing interest in a lot of RFPs coming on low-code across market, and it's not only U.S. market, but also other markets. And we are really strongly pushing our strategy on low-code and hyperautomation to be one of the core product players in that space.
So our follow-up is that, will you be able to see a higher U.S. growth in this year, because of this? And will you be able to sustain the Q4 kind of margins that you have seen in this quarter?
Yeah, so I think that as part of what we sell, all things we sell are based on low-code strategy. So I don't think there is any, different thing out there. We do expect that as soon as in the downturn, when the cost optimization projects come, there's a renewed interest in automation. And automation is low-code-based automation, because you don't want to have very, very long projects. So there's an interest. But I think we'll have to wait for how the market unfolds in those opportunities, and how many opportunities the GSI can take us out there, and how many can we generate on our own. So that's about, low-code. Sorry, what was your second question?
Just that, just a bookkeeping, like in your tax rate is being, lower, around 19%. So will you be able to sustain this kind of tax rate in FY 2024?
Yeah. So I think on the tax rate, we are fine for next 1 year, 2 years, so because we are still under the SEC rules for many of our revenue. On the Q4 margins, I think you should also understand that we are still, since there's a large percentage of our revenue, which is a license base, we are, there's a sequential revenue growth from Q1 to Q4, Q4 and Q3 being the largest quarters for us. So, the margin position, since the costs are very flat, generally you have very substantially large margins in Q4. But on Q1, Q2, you will have muted margins, and then again, Q3, Q4 margins will be like that. So that is, having said that, yes, we should be able to sustain the overall margins for the year.
Sir, my question was more related to the U.S. Q4 margin, because we have seen some dip and then improvement in U.S., so that margin.
I would say we are still, smaller revenue size to look at segment margins. I would still focus as a company on the overall margin, because in segment margins, a lot of our cost is attributed cost because we operate out of, you know, India predominantly. All the services are provided to that. So if the top line growth is high in US, the margins will be high. So, but I would still recommend that to look at the margin positions at the annual company level and at the annual level.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for taking the question.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Rahul Jain from Dolat Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I just have one question that you talked about the partnership with Mambu and Sopra. Can you just explain how these are beneficial and what are the intersection of the offering and what are the complementary element involved here?
Yes, so thanks, Rahul. So, Rahul, I think what we have done is we are looking at the whole partner ecosystem more broadly in terms of we are finding what are the complementing products and go-to-market strategies. For these are typically, these are both voodoo with banking. So while on Sopra, we are working on the digital lending side, how we can sell our digital lending product in Europe and adjacent areas because Sopra is very strong in those markets and that's our alliance. And one more, I think this is a banking, core banking product, typically more for digital banks. We are looking at how to extend beyond core banking, more structured loan products, enterprise content management, customer communication management products with them. So both these things, we are in the early stages, and I think in the Mambu, we have some successes in the market. We're also working quickly to have some more successes with Sopra.
So specifically, let's say, for example, for Sopra, don't they have their lending solution as of now?
It is, you know, what we have as a product in lending, which is a low-code-based lending platform, configurable, I think they have found that to be more attractive, what they can carry to their larger customer base. And they have other product categories, and it complements their offering.
Okay. In this kind of a go-to-market arrangement where they are also primarily a software business, so are they going to sell on their own, or this is also through their partnership eventually being sold by SI, and how the revenue share would come in case they generate this leads for us?
So they are in their own. They have got a huge customer base across those places. They are looking at their customer base and their prospect base. So that's a direct sales for them and or selling jointly along with them. Wherever we are selling, we are looking at net to Newgen revenues. And finally, the net to Newgen revenues is whatever predominantly is either list price or somewhere around 35% minus list price. So in our books, it's always net to Newgen.
Okay, and how we define the market in terms of what is targeted through this channel versus what is targeted directly and what is targeted through SI in these markets?
So, yeah, I think it's a much more detail. I think there is a clear cut on our direct channel, standard go-to-market pursuits in terms of what we do. Basically, we follow named account strategy in all our markets. We have set up target accounts and some target verticals where we have 6-7 offerings which we want to take through our enterprise sales. With the GSI, we focus on more horizontal products, enterprise content management replacement, modernization, low-code offering, where they can go to any vertical because they have the knowledge of other verticals. With alliances like Sopra, Mambu, it's around adding capabilities to their overall go-to-market strategy and their offering. So we are predominantly adding our content management and lending capabilities to their product offering.
Thank you, and sorry to interrupt you, sir. I'll request you to join the queue again for a follow-up question. Participants, you may press star and one to ask the question. The next question is from the line of Dhruv Bhatia from AUM Fund Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, please go ahead, Dhruv.
Can you just throw light on the increase in DSO days to 145 days in the current quarter?
Yeah, so yeah, it has increased over the last year. So generally what happens, our year-end DSOs are very high. As I said, a lot of billing happens in, you know, towards the later part of the year, and that's the lopsided nature of our business due to license sales. We have done roughly around more than 350 crores of billing, and predominant that is the last month would be significant part of that billing. That does add to the DSO. So our billing has grown at much higher speed than our revenues. So there are much higher DSOs. Having said that, you know, we have optimized it from a very large number, and we are targeting that to be around 120 is the right number and safe number to be around that, and then look at optimization beyond that. I think in some markets like EMEA and India, we are slightly at higher that number, that's pushing it up. But in APAC and US, we are much lower number. So I think, you know, again, our endeavor is going to keep on bringing it down to a number of 120, and then. So it's going to be generally for the next 3 quarters, it's going to be much smaller number. But as an annual number, what we're targeting is that at the year end, it should be less than 120.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Jiten Parmar from Aurum Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, most of my questions are answered. I have only one question more of, you know, what do you think is the threat of AI? And, you know, basically the way things are moving in that particular domain. So if you can throw some color on that, will it be beneficial for us or it could be some threat?
Yeah, Jiten, it's a million-dollar question, and I think, you know, everybody has, I have a personal opinion on it. I don't have an official opinion. But, you know, what I think when it looks at any disruption in technology, significant technology disruptions like cloud, mobility, smart, we have always seen that it helps product companies because they end up leveraging that technology faster than the market and then creating more products and services around using that technology. So the recent, you know, what has happened over the last 4 months in the generative AI, we've seen that throws up a lot of opportunities for us in content services, in search optimization, in content generation. So there are a lot of areas for us on the table as an opportunity next 3-4 years. So I believe that the speed by which we can innovate over next, you know, 3-4 quarters is going to determine whether we lag or whether we can ride this. But there are other wide implications of generative AI which will happen over next 3-4 years in the market, which is around augmenting capability for engineers, being able to do much more faster work. I think those should be much more operational benefits which we can get. I think some amount of challenges which the IT industry is looking at generative AI is more from the services nature in terms of when you are deploying hundreds and thousands of people to do some routine jobs. Fortunately, we are not in that business. We are still in the business of innovation. And if generative AI can help our innovation cycles, I think we should be very happy with that.
Great. Thank you. That's the only question I had. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll take that as the last question. I'll now hand the conference over to Ms. Deepti Mehrachal for closing comments.
Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us on the call. For any further questions, you can connect with me or you can go to our website. Thank you.
Thank you very much. On behalf of NewGen Software Technologies Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.